Blog Talk Radio.
The Sonic Effects, and it would please to share a bit of hospitality with you and to slip into relaxed conversation about things that are relevant to Masons these days. It's hard to find topics these days. We get into this remarkable, and unended age of communication. We seem transfixed by some of the challenges it poses for us. Too often we let ourselves believe that what we're trying to achieve as participants in Freemasonry has equivalents in the world around us. Certainly, I would agree that there are distractions, and obviously, it takes its toll. Not as decline, but in very practical terms, you get to at a certain age, you are able to savor the experiences around you without embarrassment, without that competition that often comes when you're not too sure of your position. Where overstating a point seems silly and inopportune, but where you haven't yet had enough experience to savor, to swirl it into the back of your tongue, and then swallow that joy, that elixir of life. The time we're in has changed, and I think that it's not necessarily as if we have a choice. It's not necessarily a bad thing. If you're inclined to good and bad, we're beginning to take account of our reasoning. For example, there's an interesting phenomenon where people are able to just, because they have access to technology and to an audience, are able to say whatever comes to mind. As if, you know, we're in one great big delusional state. We don't criminalize people that are experiencing delusions. You know, if we, that would be absurd. We, as much as the maddening crowd might not like it, we think that we understand the mind enough to know the nature of delusional thinking. But today you can say those things. And isn't it curious? We were reasoning through, or some people are reasoning through, how could you possibly say something when the facts are so blatantly obvious? Well, facts have always been blatantly obvious, depending on the eye of the beholder. Whether we're looking at Galilei or Copernicus or any of the geniuses that have punctuated the populations. And Marie Curie, this Polish girl who went to study in Poland and did things, but was held back because of misogyny. A woman wasn't going to be allowed access to the French Academy of Science, although later they proudly hold her Nobel award, you know, present her Nobel award, awards, or Charles Darwin, holds back his work on evolution 20 years. Not because he was rewriting, which he did, but of concern that there would be a backlash that would be experienced not only by him, he would be ostracized professionally, which he was, but it would affect his family, his friends, and his relationships with colleagues. Such was the nature of realizing how radical his thinking was at the time. We've sanitized that story quite a bit. Alan Turing, more recently. You know, there's an ugliness to the way that the world deals with innovation and genius. Along comes Freemasonry, where, you know, listening to these outlandish statements and shaking our heads and wondering, you know, either we the best minds, we're going to challenge the best minds just because we have a voice. We're not presenting any kind of argument to the science. All we're doing is offering contradiction. Grim, but meetings don't settle at that point. We're much more interested in rhetoric. Make your case, build your case, and I'm more dialectic. You know, present me all the information and I'll make the decision for myself. But we have to admit that we have some remarkable minds and they're agreeing. There's a tremendous amount of compatibility out there in the science community. And for me to come along with my meager opinion, not an argument trying to persuade, but contradiction. I don't agree. The moon is made of cheese. The world is flat. And once upon a time, mankind walked with dinosaurs. Yeah. The motivation for it isn't to share the content or the meaning of the words, but the fact that they can be said. The most outrageous thing can be said. Just that's the motivator. And as people reexamine the nature of truth in our world, we find that we can manufacture truths if we agree with each other's outrageousness. And it seems to be appealing. In a way that, like the young boy finds when he picks up that rock at the bottom of the stream bed and looks underneath for salamanders, you know, there's something appealing about doing that, or throwing that to that carefully wound fishing fly out onto the surface. There's just something appealing about it. We'll of course push back and forth as if the world has lost all reason, but I don't think it has. I don't think it has. I think we see grimly. We see not altogether, but we see the voice for disenfranchised people doing the best with what they have. They want to be heard, and I think they have a right to that, and they found a way of doing that. That the established ways had not allowed. You have no power, except once a year I want your, or every 4 years I want your vote. I want you to consider me on your ballot. So I'll be your temporary friend. I'll whisper in your ear things that make you feel good about me. With you having no ability to hold me to any sense of accountability, it works. I get what I want, and you temporarily are encouraged. But that the game's up, gentlemen. This whole group has been educated by the process. It's as if they were all students of Marshall McLuhan. Pay attention. They have aspiration and hope as a group. Disenfranchised. Do they include women? Well, in North America, they certainly do. Do they include people of color? That's transitioning, but I would say yeah. The oligarchs are living a life that we know has triggered the Occupy movement. Where has that been in the press, you might say, the media? It's been taken out, hasn't it? No, we can't have those kinds of independent ideas floating around. That's not the way the club operates. Oh, and you and I aren't members of that club. We're out there on the fringe with that independent thinking. Be persuasive, build a case, show us the facts, of course. We, our limits are really interesting. The limits that are taught to us are on one side, I guess, arts, and on the other side, the sciences. That's our limits. Can you imagine? We may never have the answer to this ongoing and constantly evolving kind of balance, but right now we have the absurd coming across the airwaves and through our all of our social media, leaving us to scratch our heads and make decisions. Do we endorse? Well, I endorse the fact that the people deserve to be heard. I recognize that the people that aren't familiar with the handling the levers of power will experiment with them, as they always do around the earth, and always have. And that through that experimentation, which is unavoidable, it's necessary, you learn from the study of what other people have done. You set your diplomats and scholars to do that. And that tempers your thinking. But there's also that process of learning from mistakes, learning from the errors, the scientific methodology, if you will. It's not failure, good or bad. It is what it is. But it takes us, each failure or each mistake or wobble, takes us one step closer to finding answers. especially with science, where we speculate about what we, the nature of what we're journeying to find. And then we are very careful not to manipulate data to suit our conclusion. It's the other way around. Our conclusion is measured as objectively as we know, and it's, we have protocols in place for that. And then we compare that. We compare that with our supposition, with our hypothesis. That's, and we, the likes of us sit back, restrained by those protocols. And it takes a bit of discipline, doesn't it? I don't mean to be glib when we say not everybody's cut out to be a Freemason, but truth is that's a latter-day event. Not everybody's cut out to have a critical mind. I don't ask me if it's possible for everybody to have one. Right now I would say no. Critical reasoning is not something that I would just say is in the air. But it has an important place. And the cell of this idea amongst our brethren has been sidestepped. This isn't a topic that's been in the front window. We've kept this wrapped up in the storage closet because the reasoning itself isn't enough. What it requires is to be tested, like any good hypothesis. You, in order to validate, replicate it. Oh, it may not make sense to people that haven't done any research, but it strengthens and validates the research the more it is replicated. And because we're looking for consistency. Do we have consistent findings? And if we don't, then we re-examine. You know, have we made an error in our calculation? And don't be silly. We have so many so-called advantages that have come about because of errors, unplanned outcomes. When attentive minds are at the table, it's like you benefit from luck when you've worked very, very hard to get to that point. It takes a lot of work to do that. Here we present ourselves. We are able to articulate restraint. And it's not at all popular, my goodness, to say that. It's like somebody, when the things are getting outrageous around you and quite exciting, somebody is saying, let's sit back and be cautious. Let's put on our seatbelt. Let's put on a belt and suspenders. Well, at the time, come on, nobody wants to hear that. You want to party with the best of them. Just be as outrageous. Yeah. It takes the unrestrained genius of youth to pull that off, doesn't it? And then we recover, usually with some scars and breaks that haunt us for a long, long time. But when you go from being immortal in your youth, you get, if you're fortunate, you get through that period fairly quickly, but you don't forget the lessons learned. And certainly when you're older, we admire the boldness and freshness, that spirit. It's dangerous to go there, but we'll go there and examine what's there. And then we'll make up our mind and we'll take precautions and mitigate the dangers in the jungle because we were able to teach those precautions. None of it is really contradictory. It's more tremendously connected. Don't you find that troubling at some level, that there is a calculus, there is connectivity? There are things that are very, very hard for us to wrap our head around, to imagine. Big Bang just didn't start at a spot, but space was expanding everywhere in all direction, all in that nanosecond, hey, a millisecond. How do we even search for pictures of it in our mind? Something that, my goodness, we require an artist's talent to interpret that thought. And it's not that masonry plods along. We have a very, very carefully manufactured process that we're learning to master. That keen relationship between a man and his tools. Do we understand them? Well, let's talk, obviously. Let's discuss. Let's get into the debate. Does it have relevance? Always. Today it does when it's discussed. Otherwise, it's like that when you see that the offices that have been created full of props, beautifully bound literature and reference material that you can tell haven't been opened. It's not much good to us if we're not even able to open the book. Don't have the curiosity to do that. And it's certainly not much learning if we're so self-absorbed and can't even talk about it without trying to alienate other people around us. All that profound world, that baggage that we drag into our lodges. So not to get ahead of ourselves, but when the dust settles, it's not going to be hardliners that are left behind. They're always there. Somebody's got to hold up the bars. It's the acknowledgement again of particular values that became very unpopular for the past 100 years, for many, many reasons. But as unpopular as it may have been, there was a value. And there was material to be understood that is being understood and has been carried on and is reaching the next generation. But is it the one followed by popular trend? Well, you can tell the answer to that is no. It's always been antithesis of popularity, I think, because it's that innovation that is so challenging. You just want to put a basket over it. It's not there. La, 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 don't tell me. Today we have a good program. Yeah. I think you'll be quite pleased with it. Decent music help us pull our thoughts and souls together, so that when we're getting into the material, that we know that somebody out there has tried to encourage that presence of mind, bring it to the surface. Oh no, get over your little phobias and that ordering you around. If you don't care to do it, there's the door. It's all right. For the rest of us, we start this, I like to say, this is a material, this is a tune that was inspired by a very beautiful waif-like actress that some of you will know, Audrey Hepburn. Remember her? Sort of a delicate, lovely creature. The camera was very, very kind to her. This is a composition by Dave Brubeck and Paul Desmond. Yes. Let me know what you think. It's called Audrey. It seems reasonable from time to time that we reevaluate our progress. Perhaps it's also reasonable as students of the craft to explore our roots beyond the vague endorsements of a few London lodges showing such initiative that brought them together for a drink and discussion of what? Evolution. I would wonder if we want to be taken seriously. We would want to understand events and make connections from the periods of significant development. First, with the Renaissance and then what poured into and out of the Enlightenment. Punctuating this narrative, our reference is far beyond those timelines. Socratic discussion, Plato rubbing shoulders with Pythagoras, tantalizing the listener with notions of studying mystery by embracing arts and sciences in a delicious process of study. Is the center within the mind or within the heart or within a symbolic reference to one or both? Huh. Knowing how essential is not the same as dealing with public attitude. He puts in the work and is owed a chance to audition. Graduation is a solitary experience, transcending anima, so profound in itself it makes possible the ability to recognize this and similar traps in our logic. For that, we praise the possibility well before we accomplish, as we would walking into the student's room of the Medici where talented artists practiced and plied their business. When you begin to listen to yourself, you begin to influence because you know the difference between hubris and accomplishment is a fine line. Who wants to be a silent influencer in an age of glamour and fame? Is a rare bird? Who will never settle for less? It isn't dead people that matter. It's the vitality of their ideas, demonstrated by the merit of what they did and how they share their talents with the world. It's not that we need to claim that we're discovering ethics. It's that we respect them. That we embrace the imperfection that is us and the universe around us and move forward. Oh, it's certainly not popular. It's not for the faint of heart. But even taking that step forward, knowing that you're right, comes with a caveat. Can you be right and wrong at the same in the same moment? Oh yeah. Here, travel a little bit further. An old French violinist, fiddle player. Hmm? He liked his jazz. This is a travel through. This is Stefan Grappelli's version of Stardust. Thank you. End. Oh, rude. Oh, rude. I thought of pertinent. Sometimes I think I'm made to seem a lot, like I put in a lot of effort just by the fact that some things just fall into your lap. Sometimes, never quite when I want them to. Today, I'm going to share with you some poetry from written by an interesting guy. But the poem itself, I tend to want to present a little bit of context by talking about the writer, whether it's Browning or Coleridge or Wordsworth. Some of my favorites are Shakespeare. But this, I think the apex today, the zenith, is the poem itself. This is the author is American fellow, Robert Frost. Now, interesting guy, very, very interesting man. And we're going to be jumping into one's better poet. We've shared some of his work before. Stopped by Woods in a Snowy Evening. But this is Mending Wall. Now, the interesting thing is that this guy has, like a lot of poets who weren't from the privileged classes, there was struggle. And it should be an acknowledgement for all of those people who have achieved and overcome that they're not alone. Because sometimes it's an isolating, it's not something you want to talk about, is it? This is a fellow that, first off, he was born in 1874. So think about the shape and development of masonry. Well, this is the kind of a touchstone that came along later. His work came along that certainly reflected some of the higher ideals and values that masonry claims to want to instill in its membership. He was born an American, and he was like like things of American, you know, we're numbering one, and then the claim that they're the hubris. I'll just leave it at that. But his dad was a journalist, and his mom took care of the kids. But his dad died of tuberculosis when he was really young. You know, not uncommon, because risks being what they were, they didn't have vaccines. My goodness, you would think that he would be fortunate to be taking a vaccine, unlike today where we can sort over and wrinkle our nose at whether we are too concerned about enough about the our health risk. But he met a young woman when they were in school together, and they were quite attracted to each other. They went on to marry. But the interesting part was he was writing poetry. And in the United States, his work was being rejected. He couldn't get anything published. So he worked for a time. Life goes on. You have family responsibilities. So he was working as his wife went out and was teaching, and he worked on a farm. He wasn't a great farmer, but that, you know, it helped. It helped pay the bills. And he, all the time he was doing that, he was working. And when after his dad died, his mother took the family back to Massachusetts to live with his parents. They took him in and supported them, and he continued to write. He was always writing poetry, but. It was well known that the publishers in London were more receptive to the kind of work, the style of work that he was doing. And it reached a point where he was into his 40s when he was starting to do this. He reached a point where decisions had to be made. And so with the support of his lovely wife, they decided to move to London. And my goodness, the publishing community was very receptive and started to promote his work. And he became, you know, he wasn't aware that he was becoming famous, but he was. Well, back in the United States, there was another writer who picked up on his work, went over to London, saw what was going on, and bought some of his work and brought them back to the United States. His work began to gain traction. So he. Eventually, he was quite content. Who wouldn't be? You know, you're living in London, and you're a poet, and you're becoming well accepted. Except that this war broke out. Now, you and I would do what any family would do: get the family as far away to safety as we possibly can. So they came back to the United States, and. He came back and discovered that people were talking about his work. Now, if I say to you, you know, is this he's American by birth, but British by culture, I would think. This is one of Frost's, we're talking about Robert Frost. This is one of his early pieces called The Mending Wall. Now, it's interesting, particularly today, where we seem to be fascinated by boundaries, and we're going to push back. Nobody kicks dirt on our shoes without retaliation, and of course we need bigger threats in order to prove the correctness of our position. But we are readdressing questions of tribalism. Can we overcome them? Well, some parts of the world can't. And they have their own history and own reasoning. And other parts of the world, and I'm sitting and living in one of the more advantaged places where we still have struggles with this question. But there's a familiarity. People are coming here, their familiarity is this love affair with this beautiful, huge country. And with this spirit. This notion of mutual cooperation. And it's precarious, but it's working. We're addressing ways to correct some of the ugliness, inequalities. And it's fraught, but we're doing it. If only we had the Prime Minister of New Zealand running the world, Jacinda Ardern. She's just so brilliant. But I digress because I can't. Walls. The writer here, Cross, talks about the stone walls that separates the speaker's property from his neighbors. And in the spring, the two of them get together to talk. They walk along it and make repairs. And the speaker sees no reason for the wall to be kept. And there are no cows to be contained and just apple. There's trees, apple and pine trees. He doesn't believe in walls for the sake of walls. You've maybe heard that old song, signs, signs, everywhere a sign. So the neighbor resorts to an old adage, good fences make good neighbors. And the speaker isn't convinced by this and mischievously presses the neighbor to look beyond the old-fashioned folly for such reasoning. And his neighbor, not to be swayed, the speaker goes on and envisions his neighbor as a holdover from a justifiably outmoded era, a living example of a dark age mentality. But the neighbor simply repeats the adage, good fences, good neighbors. So you decide, you decide for yourself about the merit, what the optics do, big thick walls, we've heard some embarrassing efforts to build walls to deal with poverty and desperation. Then I guess philosophically we embrace this earth that we live on and realize at some level that we are only temporary stewards, that we've imposed a sense of this notion of ownership and fences. Can't come to enjoy the shore because I own it. Well, it's an illusion. Here, judge for yourself, though. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen ground swell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I have come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the habit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps, not one has seen the maid or heard the maid, but in spring, mending time, we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us again, to keep the wall between us as we go. To each, the boulders that have fallen to each, and some are loaves and some are nearly balls, we have to use a spell to make some balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. And just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side, it comes to little more. There where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine and I am apple orchard. my apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. Yoni says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out, and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly. I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand with an old stone salvage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only in the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father's saying. And he likes having thought of it so well that he says it again. Good fences make good neighbors. What do you make of that? What do you make of that? Thank you. Probably shouldn't build them without understanding what the poet pointed out. What are we keeping in? What are we keeping out? Mm-hmm. Turn with me to examine another piece of the puzzle from our history. This isn't the newness and rawness of Freemasonry today that you see in the lodge. This is one of the benefits of being a Freemason, where you're an aficionado. You can walk through the galleries and just find tremendous relevance, where others just shake their head and wonder what we're looking at. Where you are enough of a student of the history that things begin to make sense. What the painter or sculptor are trying to portray has a different kind of irrelevance that perhaps known only to you. My goodness. It's like understanding history, early Roman history, the development of the Ottoman Empire, or the historical evolution of Britain and Europe, and then stumbling into Shakespeare's work. Of that 15th century work, yeah, and having things fall together. George III has tremendous meaning. Referring here to, not unlike today, there were periods of great social turmoil. And here we have these, you know, threats. It's more than just jingoism, similar, different weaponry and different way of going about it, but the outcome seems quite similar. This period we're talking about here in living the Enlightenment, like making sense of it, is reference to John Wilkes. He was a journalist who was known, declared by the establishment as a hedonist and a rake. Why? Mm-hmm. Because he criticized. That did not make him happy. And although historically we look back and say, well, he was responsible for a parliamentary reform and legal reform. Yeah, and he was elected as an MP. So here, the author references work, this social turmoil caused in the 1760s by Wilkes and his followers, not a few of whom were Freemasons, sent the Masonic leadership scrambling for the lecterns to remind the faithful that perfection within the lodge requires order and stability. Oh my. In 1763, Thomas Edmunds, Esquire, addressed his fellow Masons in the old and prestigious Horn Tavern Lodge, to which Montesquieu had once belonged. And here he passed his brothers for standing above the turbulent disquietudes and vitiated principles of most of the unsettled and uncivilized part of mankind. 2 years later in Taunton, John Whitmarsh reminded brothers that there are two grand pillars of the Masonic art, its professed design to promote civilization and adorn human life with every scientific and moral accomplishment. To achieve these goals, however, the Freemason must honor God and King and be subordinate to his superiors. In the same decade, a Masonic orator in Newcastle assured his listeners that riot and disorder cannot correct errors that arise in government. In 1764, an anonymous grandmaster lecturing near Birmingham admitted that in all ages of the world, we find a record of unruly members of every state grasping at power to which their virtues or abilities were by no means equal, and which to often overthrew the Constitution they attempted to defend. These observations afford a moral lesson to members of private societies, as well as kingdoms and states. The anonymous grandmaster asserted, however, that Masons have ever made faith to the government. In 1764, the Reverend Davenport, also lecturing in Birmingham, warned Masons to be careful whom they admit to the society. There was never a time when our fences needed to be more strictly guarded. It is not accidental that these sermons were given in a city where Wilkite agitation was particularly intense. Yet in that same sermon, and almost as if some safe concession must be made to the ideal of equality, the Reverend Davenport called for the admission of women into the lodges, or at least for the creation of lodges for women, which existed, he claimed, in Germany and France. Indeed, the very sermons from this later period, which exalt order and hierarchy, also most clearly demonstrate the tensions inevitably produced by Masonic idealism with its utopian vision of equality and harmony for all, and the need to preserve the status quo. An anonymous oration in 1772 demanding that Freemasons never, quote, poison the minds with Republican principles, nevertheless warns of the dangers of corruption in a language that clearly implies the need for some kind of reform. It goes on, when the law is dispensed with at pleasure, when it is pressed against its true intention into the service of prerogative of the one hand or privilege on the other, when magistrates are put into office to serve a party by the partial administration of it, in a word, when an honest cause is overturned by artifice, the torturing of witnesses, the disguising of truth, then the law loses its nature and efficacy. The speaker is sure, he says, that these abuses would never happen in England. Many of his fellow orators, however, were not so sure about how well the larger society measured up, or could measure up, against the demands of Masonic idealism. And indeed, in the 1770s, the lodge is increasingly offered as the ideal society, so much so that some of its spokesmen denied its artisanal origins. The Masonic philosopher William Hutchison argued that this society was never formed for or of a set of working architects or masons, but as a religious, social, and charitable establishment, and never were embodied or exhibited to the world as builders, save only under Moses and the Temple of Jerusalem. And to prove the merit of such an ancient society, derived from the Druids, from Pythagoras, and from Egypt, Hutchison enlisted the late 17th century political theorist John Locke. John Locke. Let's pause so that we can give John Locke the attention deserved by that thinker. Come back to that soon enough. Well, I we're at the end of another program. And we ended on a high note. The history, even the period, 18th century, early 18th century, refers to current events, things that were relevant at the time, and contentious. And the reaction of the lodge that, I don't know if that's quid pro quo, that balance to try and remind everybody that looking through the larger window that we need to be quieter. We don't need to be so radical. Being radical is not good. But the climate, they didn't stop the impact of Wilkes. And they certainly didn't stop Masons from aligning with the correctness of that Wilkes effort at legal and parliamentary reform. People were taking advantage of the position. How similar it is to what we're going through today. Except perhaps the Masons that we're reading about today were of a kind that stayed connected, that were aware. Now, you have to think that there would have been some discussions going on. If you're thinking about trying to establish our ideals, what do we do when we see an adulteration of the processes, where we see the repudiation of what we believe in? We remain passive about it. Well, the way we're going about it is leaving the door wide open. Not only do we leave influence behind when people are resigning or not attending a Masonic lodge, but I don't know, honestly, what they're missing. If there's no discussion going on, there's no meaning isn't being emphasized truly, what are they missing? I share with you these snippets of history. But what are they missing if there has the habit of no discussion, of waiting for somebody to wade in and give out a political statement that has been accepted? Why open a lodge? Good, reasonable questions. Well, I don't have immediate answers. I leave that all up to you. And I hope I'll see you again. We'll pick this up. It just never seems to go away, does it? Just when you think you've discovered the answer, you realize that you're looking into a mirror and you're seeing reflections. Come back. I hope you will. Thank you very much. Listeners all over the place, my goodness. Croatia and Greece, thank you for your long-term support. It means a tremendous amount. And to the land of my future son-in-law in the Netherlands, and to the standards brought forward by Masonry in lands that listeners are sitting in right now, I hope we can do you a service and reach the standard you deserve. If not today, let me give it a try next time. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back.